This is episode 133 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. My guest today is a delight. You ever meet someone that you just instantly get along with? Like you've been friends forever? Well, after this interview, I think you'll feel the same way. Oh, before we get to the interview, next week I'm starting a brand new magic course for kids. It's a full 8-week course with professional magic props and top-notch instruction from yours truly, me. During this course, we emphasize the 8 traits of a true magician: respect, preparedness, enthusiasm, confidence, humbleness, creativity, and being both authentic and giving. All of my classes focus on magic fun and learning. If you have kids that want to have fun and learn tons of magic, just go to schoolofastonishment.com. That's schoolofastonishment.com. You can contact me there and mention that you heard me talk about it on the Variety Artist podcast, and I'll give you a huge discount. Now on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Having performed over 10,000 shows since the age of 12, she's worked her magic in cities like Las Vegas, Chicago, Atlantic City, and Pigeon Forge. She also headlines on cruises sailing to 42 countries, performs military tours, and has entertained at fairs all over the USA. Close-up stage, cruise ships, socially distanced shows, she does it all. Variety Artist, I give you Jessica Jane.
Hey!
How's it going, Jessica?
It's going good. How you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. Now, let's start by talking about your name, Jessica Jane. Is that your real name?
That is my real name. Jessica's my first name, Jane is my middle name, and my last name is Peterson, and I felt much cooler making it Jessica Jane.
I should change my name to John. I have 2 J's in my name. It's John Joseph.
Ooh.
So I should do that, huh?
It's the John Joseph Jessica Jane show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm rebranding through this whole COVID thing, so I might as well change my name too, huh? Well, now, you mentioned that you had a sort of strange, intriguing background, upbringing. I want to hear about that.
All right. Well, I grew up watching my mother get sawn in half. Often. It's a true story. My mom worked for both John Bundy and Al Belmont when I was growing up.
As opposed to Al Bundy?
Yeah, Al Bundy. Love that show. Yeah, I grew up watching her get sawn in half. Grew up backstage at Six Flags Great Adventure when John Bundy was doing the Thriller shows there. It was awesome, like Halloween themed, really cool magic. That was my experience as a child. I thought everyone's parents were in magic. I thought it was completely normal to grow up inside ATA flight cases and backstage in boxes.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because sometimes I'll tell a story about some sort of entertainment story, and I think it's completely normal that somebody's jabbing a spike through their neck or whatever. But to the average person, that's a strange, bizarre story.
Yeah, you almost have to change your perspective for what normal is. I realized that going out into the world and trying to make friends in school when I was a kid, because I got bullied so bad. Everybody thought I was a complete crazy person talking about being friends with Bugs Bunny and Batman, because being backstage at Six Flags, I thought they were my actual friends.
They're your buddies. Wait, I don't mean to keep talking, but my first word ever was Batman.
Oh, no way.
It's true. I'd run around as a little kid in the late 60s going, da 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 da, Batman.
Oh, that's awesome. I really did think he was my friend. They had the Batman stunt show at the time that they were doing that show, and it was actually the world famous Nerveless Knox, a very, very famous circus family that played the main characters in the show and did all the stunts.
How old were you when you were working that?
Oh, gosh. I was backstage with my mom, maybe I was like 4 or 5 years old. They would either sit me in the audience or they would sit me backstage, and I would watch the shows and thought it was normal.
Well, a lot of people listening to this, they're road warriors. You know, they go and they set up and they break down, or they set up, do a show, break down, set up, do a show, break down. But you had your own show in Gatlinburg. How did that come about?
I did. I too was a road warrior for years, whether it was doing my Uncle Al Belmont shows and breaking those down, setting them up, going all over the place. That was all I really knew. I ended up in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee on vacation with my friend Alan St. George. Mm-hmm. The way I ended up staying there was I went to see Terry Evanswood's show. I had never met him. He was a friend of Alan's. And I was sitting in the audience. It was the opening night of their Christmas show, for their first time performing their Christmas show at Wonderworks, the big upside-down building on the parkway. Mm-hmm. We're sitting in the audience. The pre-show music stops, which you know is not a great thing. It means there's something up. And it turns out that the assistant in the show had quit.
Oh.
5 minutes before. And they brought me backstage. And I knew all the illusions. I knew the water levitation. I knew the twister illusion. I knew the metamorphosis, the tube illusion, all that stuff. I ended up in the show and I stayed there for thousands and thousands and thousands of shows.
Wow.
True story, which was an interesting experience because I went from having to break down and set up shows to being in a show that's staying in the same location every day, but with huge illusions, and realizing that there's just as much wear in a different way on props that are used every day versus the ones that are taken apart, packed up, put in a trailer, put back together. Different type of wear, but something new goes wrong every single show, even when you do the same show twice a day, every day.
Do you remember any of the things that went crazy or something broke or?
We put a fly bar in the show. We learned that a wire can twist its way where something unclips. And we had Blackstone Jr.'s Girl to Flower Tube almost come down on top of us. We had fire. We had the water levitation short. Somehow, like, the barrier between the water and the electricity went down and the thing started smoking and spraying water. It was a nightmare. They were able to unplug it and save it, and we performed it 2 hours later. But stuff like that.
Did you listen to my podcast on occasion, right?
Yes.
Did you hear the Ray Anderson one that I did where he was doing the water levitation?
I didn't, but I've seen him live do it. He's one of my all-time favorite magicians ever.
You have to hear his interview because he talks about, I don't know if I should even give this away. He talks about a rat climbing into his shoe before the levitation. And that's all I'll say. And so everybody that wants to hear that story, go back and listen to the Ray Anderson interview. It's fascinating. And
I can't wait.
Hilarious.
Yeah. I cannot wait.
It's something you two have in common, probably.
Oh, I can't wait now. That's going to be awesome. It's funny. I've had weird little creatures in spaces, magical spaces with me before on stage, but never a rat. Oh. That's a new one.
Have you ever crawled into a space and then opened your eyes and you see a little critter in there with you?
Oh, yeah. Because the things would live in a warehouse. So little things live in there. Or there may be like a nest from mice that wasn't there the last time you did the trick because it went in the warehouse. It's interesting. But with Terry's show, what I realized is we also had times where maybe he's allergic to bees and he got stung by bees and I had to go on in his place for a couple of routines, or he got stuck at a doctor's appointment or in traffic and I'd open the show. And I learned from being forced out there to do things. Like, I'd done my own magic. I grew up performing in amusement parks. I started my uncle's show at a place called Clemson Amusement Park. And so I'd done my own magic and I'd done birthday parties and had done magic competitions and went to magic camp and the Lance Burton teen weekend and all that stuff. But Terry's show taught me a lot, being forced out there when you got a cover and you don't know how long you're going to have to cover for. I'd wait to hear him stomp 2 times behind the curtain. And that would tell me that the next illusion was fixed and we were ready to go. So it taught me a lot about working in the moment and problem solving. I've fixed tricks on stage in front of an audience that they had no idea were broken, that type of stuff. But that show, I am someone who grew up with very low self-esteem. I still struggle with it, and very low confidence.
Nobody would ever think that.
Oh, dude, I have such social anxiety. I am at home in front of 2,500 people. I do a show, I'm fine. You know, talking to magic friends and stuff, I'm good. Walking up to a bar where I don't know people, like, gives me a rash across my chest. Like, I can't, like, I can't deal with it. Terry's show broke me out of my shell. It gave me enough of a boost in confidence to send a video to Penn and Teller's Fool Us. And I got on the show and it went well. After that came out, I realized I wanted to go bigger. Hmm. I had done the same show every day, twice a day for years and years and years. And Terry had said, he's like, why aren't you doing your own show somewhere? And I'm like, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'll never be good enough. You know, I'm either not skilled enough or not pretty enough or not this enough. And he's like, just stop. You have paid your dues in full. And he wrote, dues paid in full. Jessica Jane, signed Terry Evanswood on a piece of paper. And he made me frame it. That season was my last season with him, and I decided I was going to open my own show in a neighboring town with his permission because it was close to him, mm-hmm. but an afternoon show.
Do you remember the first time that you got on stage from going backstage? You were doing all the backstage stuff, and then someone said, okay, Jessica, it's time. You need to go on stage right now.
Yes. Actually, ironically, there was a time when it was me and Barry Mitchell.
Oh,
I
really?
Know you've interviewed him.
I just had him on.
So the owner of the Wonderworks Corporation, the owner of everything, John Morgan, you've seen his billboards everywhere. It's Morgan and Morgan for the people. He owns the Wonderworks buildings. He came to see the show, but he was late flying in by helicopter. And Terry's like, we have to stall. We have to stall. Terry had been stuck. I think it was something like, I may be mixing two stories. I'll have to ask Barry. But Terry had been stuck on a plane. His flight was delayed. And so I went on and I covered for about 20 minutes until Barry Mitchell could get there because I was running out of material because I didn't have anything there to do. And I can't do like things from the show.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember Barry literally whispering his intro to me. And as I came off stage, I introduced Barry Mitchell and he covered until Terry got there.
Oh, I'm going to have to ask him about that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I would have known that. You know, I just interviewed him, I don't know, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
I wish I would have known that story. I would have asked him about that too, from his side.
Oh, I love him.
All right. Now, you've been doing tons of cruise ships lately, right? Or before
yes.
COVID. So COVID hits, all the cruise ships are docked.
Oh, dude.
What happens?
In general to what I did?
Yeah. Yeah. In general to you. I mean, I know what happened to the cruise ships, but... I mean, all of my friends are out of work. And so, but you pivoted, right? And you started working with.
I'm doing some virtual stuff with my boyfriend, David Minkin, who's fabulous magician, world champion, close-up guy. He's so good. He's had his own show in California for over 14 years, I think. It's one of like the longest running one-man magic shows. He realized that everything was going to have to change. And he immediately started learning about lighting and Zoom and BlueJean and all the different platforms and got the DSLR camera. And I was sort of questioning it at first. I didn't know how that medium would play. I was really nervous about it because, again, I have horrible social anxiety. So when I'm in a theater and I'm on stage, I feel like it's like almost like Linus and his blankie. Like when I'm on stage and I'm in front of an audience, I have Linus's blankie and I'm in my place. But Zoom is like, oh my God, there's all these little squares with people and I can only see four of them. And
that's it. And
like,
you.
This is scary. Exactly. And I can see me, which I hate watching myself or like listening to my voice or anything. So seeing me terrifies me on Zoom. He sort of broke me with it. I've done some corporate stuff with him that's going really, really well. And some other shows. And I also started revamping mine because I realized come the end of March, I had already changed the text on my page for the agency I'm with. Can perform without physical audience participation. Putting in those words. Can perform right. socially distant shows.
Exactly.
All that stuff. And I was willing to change the show because for the cruise ships, as you know, we've got to have at least two 45s with completely different material. So now it's okay, I'm doing two brand new, possibly three brand new 45s with no physical audience participation. Yep. And how am I going to incorporate more multimedia to keep their attention without someone on stage? How can I simulate audience participation? And I started watching things like the Queen concerts with Freddie Mercury when he does the Dale, yeah, and the audience does a callback. And I'm like, well, that's audience participation.
Yeah.
So those sort of things have helped me, and I've written these new shows so they can be performed. In August, we got a call from my friend Aiden Sinclair, who runs a show called Illusions of the Past on the Queen Mary and at the Stanley Hotel, which is where he's at now. Mm-hmm. And he called me on a Tuesday at 6 p.m. saying he had to have emergency sinus surgery.
Nope.
At 7 a.m. on Wednesday, David and I were on a plane. 5:30, we were watching the show. Then we were doing it. Within 24 hours, we had to learn a socially distanced 90-minute mentalism show with the history of the Stanley Hotel and a completely different medium with only, I'd say, with only 40% of our material and 60% brand new magic and mentalism.
Wow.
So that was a big learning experience because it was August. I mean, I think Colorado may have been one of the only places with live shows. And of course, we were terrified of it. Absolutely terrified.
We definitely don't have that here in California yet.
Oh yeah, no, we took every precaution. We did temperature checks, socially distanced seating, masks on above the nose the whole show. If they bring it down below their nose or they take it off, we had two times when the police escorted people out of the show.
Wow.
Because we were really serious about it and about the safety of everyone around them. But also in the middle of doing that, David's sister passed away. Our second week doing the shows. And that was a whole nother thing because here we're doing a ghost show. And David amazed me because he wouldn't have been able to travel to be with his family or anything because of COVID. It's like, even if something like that happens, people can't be together.
That's
and
right.
He pushed through and man, he did a freaking amazing show and just dedicated their shows to his sister. But that was an incredible experience, not just working with him, but also seeing someone be so strong through something that's already strange because of COVID. And then dealing with all that was a big learning experience.
Wow.
But now after getting through those 4 weeks, we're like, okay, we can do normally socially distanced shows. We've got this figured out.
Anything after this is a piece of cake.
Oh yeah, totally.
The expression, the show must go on, is absolutely true. I've had a similar experience in that when I separated with my wife, then that night I had a show and I was all smiley and happy. And then I broke down afterwards, but during the show, everything's fine. It's perfect. It's beautiful. Life is great.
Oh yeah. Dude, you like, I've broken ribs. I've dislocated shoulders and stuff. I've had things with family members too, where like you go on. And a lot of the times people are like, that's the best show you've ever done.
Yeah.
There's gotta be something about the fight or flight adrenaline.
Maybe on the inside, you're really emotional. And so it comes out.
Yeah.
In your performance, maybe. I don't know. I have no idea. All right. Let's change gears a little bit. I just about 3 hours ago talked to James Taylor.
Oh, he's so good.
I understand you had some sort of a relationship with Ward Hall.
Yes.
And I don't mean relationship like relationship, but I mean like you did some things with Ward Hall. What do they call him?
Oh, the king of the circus sideshow.
Do you know who invented that expression?
Ward?
No.
Because I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Somebody I talked to about 3 hours ago.
No, he did not.
Well, listen to it. When it comes out, it'll come out about 2 or 3 weeks after yours. Yep.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool.
Okay, so tell me about Ward Hall and your dealings with him.
Rewind to, I'm 17 years old. My parents have gone through a really bad divorce. I love them both, but like it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with Uncle Al at the Meadowlands Fair in New Jersey. So I was doing a little bit of magic. I was doing the shows with him. The sideshow comes to town and I'm watching them set up this huge tent with all these beautiful banners painted by Johnny Mia. I got pulled in just like so many people do. I went to see the show. the electric lady touched my nose and shocked me. And I'm like, I need to be here. I completely need to be here. And I listened to Ward Hall on the Bally stage talking about, you know, Zamora, the gorilla girl, and Revolvo, the girl who can turn her head in a 360-degree circle. She can look forward by walking backward all at the same time. Like, all that stuff. I loved his pitches. One night, I left the trailer where we were staying and walked across the Midway and went in the tent, and they baptized me by fire. They taught me to eat fire, put the fire on my tongue. And Ward Hall said that he had watched me in Uncle Al's show, and he goes, "Darling, you're a diamond in the rough, and I want to be the one to do the polishing." And I went, okay. He's like, "Why don't you run away with us?"
That's like great and creepy all at the same time.
It is. But I love him so much. He's my hero. He's like, "If you run away with us, I'm going to teach you things that you'll use in entertainment for the rest of your life." Hmm. I was friends with Gypsy Rose Lee. The Lobster Boy and I were close. He's like, "I have stories I can share with you and bring you into a whole nother world." And I'm like, okay. I packed my bags, and the night afterward, I left with them, and I stayed on the road. I lived in one of the bunks, I guess we would call it, which was really a semi-truck turned into living space with no running water. But it was a blast. He taught me the most important lesson I've ever learned in my life, which is to talk to people and not at them. And that's how he brought people in that tent. He taught me to speak to them in an emotional way. It was how he was so successful on that Bally stage. He also taught me how to turn the tip, which is reading a crowd. You're pitching them, you know, Pooh Bah over here, the little guy's gonna eat the fire, and Tommy Breen is gonna swallow the sword, and blah, 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 blah. And then you feel that they're about to walk away or they're about to spend their money. And that's when you say, "But for the next half hour, ticket prices will be a dollar cheaper. If you see the sideshow now, the giant is standing up inside," which the whole thing was the giant was always standing up because
he's a giant.
Yeah, it was a figure. It looked like the giant had been dead for 100 years.
Oh, no.
True story. He changed me as a performer. He helped me conquer my anxiety. He gave me confidence. And I realized through becoming friends with both working acts and some people that were self-declared sideshow freaks, that were these amazing people that had all these things that normal people would think would hinder them, but they'd use them to their advantage and be even more incredible than any person who's considered quote unquote normal. They were magical people, and it changed me. And I gained a family in a time when I felt like I had no one and nothing. They gave me encouragement and really truly changed my life.
What a great way to blast you off into your entertainment career.
Huh? Yeah.
I mean, have you taken a lot of those things and brought them into your performance now?
Oh yeah. I mean, the fire eating I did on Penn & Teller, I was actually supposed to do a routine that was based on a wildfire that I lived through in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And then at the last minute, the CW said, "It's too dark to talk about. We're going to need to go a different direction." So they got, what's his name? He sings Donka Shane, darling.
Oh yeah. Wayne Newton.
Wayne Newton. So I was supposed to work with Wayne Newton on the show. At the last minute, they decided not to have me work with Wayne because his eyesight was horrible. He was half blind and he wouldn't be able to read the newspaper that I used in the routine. So we changed at the last minute, and I just told a true story about running away with the sideshow and Ward. The fire really was that TV spot and got me that whole thing.
Wow. I was reading that the college course that changed your life was something called the Socratic Method.
Oh, dude, yes. Where
tell
did
me
you
about
find that?
This to me was fascinating. So tell me a little more about that.
Okay, so I finished an entire summer with the sideshow, and I had promised my mom that I would at least try college, even though I know it's great for some people. For me, I'm like, this is 4 years of my life that I could be entertaining people and like breaking them out of their reality and learning. I don't need a piece of paper to show I can jump through a hoop for 4 years because the job that I'm destined for doesn't require it.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a backup plan because if I have it, I'll take it. But I promised her I would do it, and I had originally wanted to go for entertainment management, but there weren't enough people that applied for the major. It was Stockton College of New Jersey near Atlantic City. So I went for hotel and tourism. One of the classes I signed up for was the Socratic Method. I walked in one day, and on the board it said, "The sky is blue." And the professor was sitting there and just looked at us and said, "Why?" I'm like, "Oh, well, because blah, 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 and the cones in your eyes and da, da, da." And he's like, "Why? Why?" Every answer we put out, he'd have another question and another question. And I realized that we were learning just through basically answering our own questions and then asking more, which is exactly what the Socratic Method teaches you. And I took that class, I finished the whole thing, and when it ended, my professor had told me that I had everything I needed to make it in life. And he's one of the people that encouraged me to actually leave college and pursue entertainment. But I realized I could learn anything just from asking questions and answering them.
Do you do that now when you're putting a brand new show together?
Oh, totally. All the time. And I mean, we have a tool in our pockets. We have Google. People didn't have that years ago. We can literally answer a question without even doing work.
YouTube is one of my favorite places to go because if I don't know how to do something, all I do is type in, "How do I?" And then I do it.
It changed my whole world. I'm like, I don't need this. I don't need to pay tens of thousands of dollars and be in debt my entire life for what I want to do.
Over the years, I imagine you've had a lot of coaching and things like that. What is your philosophy on coaching and advising entertainers and that type of thing?
So I worked with tons of people, great coaches. It's something I'm getting into now that I've been doing for about the last 2 years. I worked with Joni Spina several times. Once in my teenage years, I worked with her when I did Connie Boyd's show Illusions at Sea in 2013. She taught me a lot. She taught me a whole lot. She changed the way that I moved, the way that I held myself. Because again, as someone with low self-esteem, my shoulders were hunched forward and my head was down. And I wasn't great about making eye contact. And while Ward had broken me out of a lot of that on the ballet stage, Joni fine-tuned it. And she took it from being good to giving me a presence and a character. So I'd walk on stage and we did something she called stancing with David Copperfield, where having powerful stances, maybe six that you work on, that you end a routine with, start a routine with, take a pause with, it gives you power on stage and it can look like you're dancing, but you're not, you're stancing.
Stancing.
It works good. Very well. If you watch a Copperfield show, you will see the stancing for sure. But she helped me a ton, but the person who has helped me more than anyone besides Ward is Lance Burton. The Lance Burton Teen Weekend changed my life. They taught us things like we were adults. He and Eugene Berger, bless him, I miss him so much, and Jeff McBride, they truly molded us to perform for a living.
Mm.
Not just the you know, it's the show business. It's the business is the bigger of the two words type thing.
Yeah.
They helped a lot. And watching Lance's show over and over and over and over again, watching him move and seeing that he was authentic and that he was just himself. He was the same way when he talked on stage that he was off stage. Being able to talk to him and ask him questions and doing the Lance Burton Teen Weekend is what genuinely molded me as a performer in addition to what Ward helped me with.
Well, other than this podcast, how can we get a little of that rubbed off on us? Are you doing some consulting and coaching right now?
Yeah, I am doing some consulting and coaching. I am. I've had great experiences like with Ward and Lance and Joni. And then I've also had other times where I worked with a coach or consultant. And while it helped me be better, they really tore me down. And as someone with low self-esteem, which a lot of other performers go through, it almost kept me from performing again. I almost gave up multiple times. And so I wanted to start consulting for people, for performers, where not only do they become an even better version of themselves, but they never feel down during the process. Because I've learned that what has worked best for me is someone finding my strengths that I don't know I have, and then molding them and inspiring me and empowering me to grow. And that's what I'm trying to do for other people. And I've done everything from consulting with performers and not just magicians. I've worked with some comedians, some jugglers, ventriloquists. I've also done things for groups like team building for corporate groups.
That's very cool. How can somebody get some of that consulting?
You can contact me at jessicajanemagic@outlook.com or send me a message on my website, jessicajane.com, or even reach out on Facebook. I'm on there too. I don't check the messaging as much because I'm not huge on social media. I like to make it look like I'm on social media a lot by posting, but I literally don't look at it much.
All right. Well, we're going to go to fact or something John just made up. Sound like fun?
Yay. Okay.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Ah. All right, here we go. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to say a headline. You can tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
All right, number one. Well, we already talked about this. Jessica ran away with a circus sideshow at 17 years old.
Ding, 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 ding.
Of course. Okay, I'm going to skip that one because we already talked about that. All right, here we go. First one. This will actually be the first one. Jessica was a mermaid diver in an aquarium.
Ding, ding, ding. That is true.
Is it?
It is. I needed a day job because I was working at the Sweet Fanny Adams Vaudeville Theater at 8 o'clock every night, which is where I ended up doing my show a few years later. But I needed a day job because I had no money. And so I applied at Ripley's Aquarium of the Smokies, and they put me in a mermaid tail in a fish tank. I'd swim around and lip sync the words to some ridiculous song that they could hear on the other side of the aquarium. And we dove 15 feet, sang songs, we blew bubbles and then made them look like hearts and stuff.
How old are you at the time?
Oh, I was like 23, maybe. It was like 8 years ago. Yeah, true story. It was fun. I guess they did diving shows where the diver would feed the fish. Mm-hmm. And the first show I ever did, the fish weren't used to not being fed at that time. And I got bit like six or seven times by these darn fish.
All right, next one. Jessica's first routines involved a bed of nails and the blockhead.
Not true, but they came about later in life.
Do you do the blockhead?
I do blockhead. In fact, that's why I'm not scared of getting my COVID test, because I'm like, are you kidding me? I do this with a nail and a drill. This is so easy.
Yeah, if anybody doesn't know what blockhead is, it's exactly what Jessica's saying. You put a nail through your nasal pass. Well, you explain it. I don't do it.
You put a nail straight back, not up. Up is bad. Straight back, and it goes through that passage, which I found out doing World of Wonders that you technically have two, and when you've done it 30 times a day and it gets swollen, you'll find the other passage by accident and it'll hurt
whether you like it or not.
Yeah
You remember your first illusion? I read something about being shot out of a cannon.
Oh yeah, the first stage illusion I did, a girl didn't show up that my uncle had hired, and I was like a preteen. I got chased by this gorilla in this circus routine to join the circus from the P.T. Barnum musical, and not the greatest showman, predating that. They put me in this ringer and flatten me and then put me into a cannon and shoot me into a drum, and I'd pop out with a dog. It was an experience. But my first trick was the dancing cane.
You still have it with you, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it travels with me. It's like in my suitcases when I travel. I have it now. I literally have it like in the corner of this room. It's my blankie.
Every time you do a show, you have your dancing cane somewhere there?
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere that I go. It's literally my blankie.
All right. Last one. Jessica went from being homeless in New Orleans, according to where you're from, to living in a castle.
Also true. Ding, ding. I ended up homeless on the streets in New Orleans, literally like was staying in squat houses. This is like right after World of Wonders let out for the season. We were in squat houses. I learned how to make a hobo candle, which is a way that you use very little wax and you can burn a candle all night in like a beer can. Stood in bread lines. I did 3-card Monty to make enough money to buy myself food. I would go get showers at a Flying J truck stop so that I always at least looked nice. Huh. Yeah, and that went on for a while. And then one of the guys that I was with, you know, on the streets there, a guy that I was dating at the time who had been the MC of World of Wonders, he had a friend that he'd done a movie with randomly, this guy named Alan St. George, the guy that I was with when I saw Terry's show for the first time. Mm-hmm. He invited him to a dinner party with Marshall and Mary Brodeen. I got to go along. I had no idea what was going on. I found a dress from a Goodwill. We went to this castle in Savannah, Illinois called Havencrest Castle. It's over 60 rooms, gorgeous, Victorian. That night, we're sitting at this long table in the Florence Renaissance dining room and eating something under glass. It was like, you know, pheasant under glass or something. Something under glass. It was amazing. And he ended up talking about how he had always wanted to do a show based on the last Tsar of Russia, the Romanovs. Mm-hmm. And I loved researching the Romanovs as a kid. Like I had gotten hooked on the Anastasia cartoon, and then I read their tragic story, but wanted to learn more about them and more about Rasputin and that whole story before it tragically ended.
Yeah.
We ended up talking, and he ironically looks exactly like the last Tsar of Russia.
Wait, who, Alan?
Yeah, yeah, he looks identical to him. I gave him all these ideas and I started saying, well, you could do this thing with a sword and you could do this. And what if Rasputin was the bad guy in the show? And then you had Anastasia's daughter or his wife in it, and this could happen and that could happen, and multiplying Fabergé eggs. And he was just fascinated. Most people, because this is what I've experienced, because I am a woman in a male dominated field, I never bring attention to it. I never really mention it because I don't care. I'm a magician. It doesn't matter whether I'm male or female or whatever, you know, it's just, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He said, I'm sorry. I didn't know that you knew so much, because most times in a group, everyone assumes that I should be seen and not heard, and that I must be just a girl. Wow. Or that, oh, you're the assistant, so you have nothing to add. Which isn't the case, because there's so many assistants I know that know as much, if not sometimes more, than the magicians from their perspective.
Oh, truly. I hate to interrupt, but it's true. When I first started doing this, I stage managed also.
Oh, yeah.
We worked with Tigers and Dancing Girls, the whole thing, flew around the country doing all that.
Yeah.
What I realized stage managing is that the magician would stand there when the tiger appeared, stand there and go, ta-da! And it was all the stage managers, all the stage hands that would be pulling the strings and pushing the buttons and doing all of that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. They're the people with the secrets, man.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So how did you end up living in this castle?
I was with Alan talking to him about all this stuff. And he said, you know, you have so many great ideas. And I didn't know tonight was going to go this way, but would you like to stay? Mm. And I went, what? He's like, you want me to stay homeless. Here? He asked me to stay, and I ended up living there for a year and a half working on shows with him, and mm-hmm. and we ended up doing shows. We did the Magic Tsar Act. We had people like Bob Fitch come in to be creative consultants and give us advice, and we learned that we were terrible. but then we got a lot better.
Yeah, well, Bob, you got to listen to Bob, because he knows what he's talking about.
Bob knows.
That was Fact or Something John. John just made up.
All right, we're going to go on to some fan questions. You want some fan questions?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Rob Balchunas.
I love him.
You know Rob?
Yes, he's awesome.
AKA Rob, the balloon guy out of LA. You've done long runs at theaters and at sea. Do you prefer performing at the same venue or traveling?
Oh, that's hard. I honestly, when I do one of them for a long time, I start craving the other type of performing.
Yeah, grass is always greener, huh?
Yeah, it's whichever one, like when I'm on cruise ships and I've been on them, because I was at sea like 260 days in 2019, 2018. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing those, you're like, oh man, I wish I could be on the road and moving illusions from place to place and stuff, yeah. But I'm in the same place and nothing changes and all the ships are so similar. It's like the Twilight Zone, but I love it. I do love that too. And now that I'm sitting at home in the living room, doing magic for myself, I really miss the cruise ships.
He also asks, what's the biggest thing? And this is kind of a tough question, a big question. What's the biggest thing that can be improved upon in magic right now?
I have three things for that. They may not be popular answers, but they're honest from my perspective.
Okay.
One, people need to credit more often. If you're doing something and you took it from someone else, or even if you were inspired and it's not done in a malicious way, you have to credit people and ask permission. There's so many people that steal things from one another, and it's a problem in magic. It really is. And sometimes I think that people don't know any better. And so I think it's important to credit so that you lead by example.
Yeah.
And two, people need to be more accepting of people in magic, in every other art form, no matter what their gender is, what their religion is, the color of their skin, anything. We need to realize that everyone is choosing to be a magician or be a juggler or be a comedian, and it shouldn't matter what they look like or what they believe in. They need to be accepted, mm-hmm. because that's a big hurdle, especially in magic and comedy.
Number three, what's number three?
Okay, number three. This again is not going to be very, very popular. Okay. With what I have to say.
The first two, I was not offended by the first two at all.
Okay, first two are good, but this one, women in magic is a fabulous thing. I'm so excited that there's more women now.
I am too. By the way, have you heard my interview with Romani Romani?
I haven't. I have to though, because I love her.
That's one of my favorite interviews that I've done. So go back and listen to that one. It's terrific.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait, because I want to read her book too. She's just fabulous.
I've read her book. It's excellent.
Oh, cool.
But I love having women in magic.
But there's, I guess, and this is point three, it's good to be accepting and to promote young women getting into magic and be accepting and book women at your event that are magicians and female comedians. But at the same time, I've seen it a lot where women get very, very excited to get into it. They post something, it's not done well, and male magicians flock to them and tell them how great they are instead of giving constructive criticism and saying, hey, it's great, I'm so glad you're into this, but if you did this, it would be an even better trick. Hmm. A lot of women get praised and then they don't improve, and people are like, oh, women in magic, blah, blah, blah. Well, they don't improve because they think that what they're doing is great based on comments on social media and from people at conventions. I'm really lucky that I had a really hard time the last 15 years, and people told me what I did wrong and what could be improved on. Mm. While it was hard, it was good, because I wouldn't be working full-time on cruise ships and working in theaters if I hadn't had those people say, it's great what you're doing, but it needs to be improved, and this is how you can improve it. Try not to give false praise. Encourage people, but don't give false praise. Constructive criticism is a good thing. Of course, do not give criticism unless people are asking for it.
Yeah, that's
this
true.
Is another thing. But yeah, it's important to encourage women in magic and in other places as well. But don't be one of those people, and don't be creepy about it. There's all these guys that'll be like, oh, I wasn't watching the magic because I was looking at your face. I'm like, really? Really? Like, don't do that. Just don't be creepy.
Number four, don't be creepy.
Yeah, that should be number four.
All right, next one. Regina Martinez, a.k.a. Silly Sparkles, out of Austin, Texas, says, one of my favorite magicians.
Oh, she's so cute.
She's very sweet, and she's a good performer, too. Now, she's one that really grabbed the online performing from the very beginning and jumped in. All right, she asks, she said, I notice you don't wear a jacket when performing. Do you avoid tricks that use sleeves, or do you find creative ways around it?
I would say it's more of creative ways around it. I do have a jacket that I keep on the back of a chair that has two large pockets at the front. Took me ages to find a nice blazer with legitimately good pockets for women. But I'll use that when I do silk to egg. So I need substantial pocket space.
Yeah.
I don't really use any of the sleeve stuff. A lot of my stuff is stage where it doesn't require it. Even though I don't have sleeves, I utilize the costume. It may look like I don't have anything that I'm hiding with the main costume I wear is the sleeveless, I guess it's a cat suit with a belt, but the belt was made specifically with two routines in mind that I do in the shows. And I also do have one jacket that the sleeves come off of that turns into like this collared vest. That I can actually attach the sleeves to.
Wait, can you hear that?
Yes. Hello, friends.
But that is my mom feeding the fish and this dog that she has. She just loves the fish. And every time she goes to feed the fish, he goes crazy. That's him barking and going crazy. Nobody's torturing a dog in my house. Here's the story we've all been waiting for. We read on Facebook, Kenny Mikey... Children's TV and live producer, performer out of Palm Beach, Florida says, great magician, better human. She literally saved my bleep at the APAP showcase and possibly my life in 2018 in New York. And he goes on. He says, she probably saved me thousands of dollars as well. And it all happened in a split second. And if she had not acted the way she did, you probably would have already heard this story as a disaster of epic proportions. Okay, I gotta hear it.
First of all, Kenny and his wife and partner Riley are incredible performers from Page Turner Adventures. They do amazing work on stage and libraries at schools, everything. They're just incredible. But we've been friends for years because we're all into the vaudeville stuff and we have the same loves. And I was at APAP with an agent and a few other performers, and that morning I chose not to go with them to the event that they were going to. I don't even know why I did it. It was like everything happens for a reason. This is one of those stories. Mm-hmm. I was not supposed to be at APAP. I was not supposed to be in New York. It's a really crazy story. But I feel like destiny put me there. And at the last minute, Kenny and Riley needed a stage manager for their showcase. And I mean... last minute.
This is kind of your theme. It's like, well, we don't have a stage. Jessica. Jessica, how about her?
I love saving the day. It makes me happy. Like, if I can help someone, whether it's as a stage manager, as the magician, as a host, as an MC, like, I just do it. But they called me and they were in this black box union theater, keywords, mm-hmm. union theater. Mm-hmm. There were people doing 15-minute showcases. So it's really important. I mean, their work for the year relies on this showcase. It's very important to them. And everybody knows how nerve-wracking showcases are. This was the Association of Performing Arts Professionals. While I was exhibiting there, I wasn't showcasing. I ended up going at the last minute. They gave me the script. They talked me through the show. I'd seen this show once before, this version they were doing. I'm like, okay, we're fine. Put on the headset. Let's go. And at one point in the show, Kenny goes on stage in extremely tall stilts. Mm-hmm. And he was a Ringling Brothers advanced clown. I mean, he's an incredible stunt guy, too. I'm looking around, and word of advice, which is the only reason that I saw this, any performing space I go into, the first thing I do is scan to see any potential threat to either me or a volunteer or another person I'm working with.
Sure.
Whether that be wires, water on the stage, slick spots, sawdust, anything, nails, I look for it and I look through the entire space. And that has saved me and multiple people multiple times. Joni Spina taught me to rehearse mistakes. That's what the Copperfield Show does. So when I walk in and think, what can go wrong?
Yeah.
And I was looking around, and again, it's a union place. So in a union theater, you can't touch anything. If you touch anything, they will bite your head off. I'm looking at this wire that runs along the ground that comes up two steps that is attached at one step in the middle and runs back down. I'm like, whoever gaffed this should be shot, first of all. But you can't touch anything. It seemed like the wire had gotten a bit looser. And I'm calling the cues. I'm panicking because I want this to be perfect for them, because I want this to go well. Kenny's on these tall stilts and he starts to go up the steps in stilt, which is difficult on its own.
Yeah.
And he just barely catches the wire on the second step going up. And it goes around. He has clown shoes on the bottoms of his stilts.
Yeah.
So it's getting hooked on, and I realize he's going to fall from like 16 feet if something doesn't happen. And so I quite literally threw down the headset, dove, pulled up the wire as the union like stage people are screaming at me not to touch anything. Kenny was already kind of falling, caught himself because he's a pro and he's so good. I got the wire out of the way, like was laying on the steps getting yelled at by the union people trying to clear this wire, and then ran back, grabbed the headset and called the next lighting cue. But he could have potentially gone down. And he would have fallen through the entire curtain system and backdrop in front of everyone booking them for children's perfect shows.
For a showcase. Perfect. Ugh.
And been very, very hurt. Like, that probably would have been a pretty hefty emergency room bill, which is why I think he's like, she saved me money.
Hurt in a lot of ways.
But I wasn't supposed to be there. And it just all kind of happened at the last minute. And I'm so glad I was there and that I caught it.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Thanks for doing my show, Jessica. That was great.
Yeah, you're fun, man.
Yeah, well, no, you were fun.
No, you were.
No, you.
Do
you have any social media or anything you'd like to plug before I let you go?
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram at Jessica Jane Magic. I'm on Facebook as well. My private account's Jessica Jane Peterson, if you want to friend me on there. Mm-hmm. And you can message me through my website, jessicajane.com.
Great, great. And don't forget to visit schoolofastonishment.com to register your kids for my next magic class. Make sure to tune in a couple of weeks for the James Taylor interview. It's not the You Got a Friend James Taylor. It's the James Taylor Famous for Sideshow. Yeah, that James Taylor. And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist podcast. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.